cut into the, I usually let that music play, but I got Dr. Wood on, and we have so much information I'd like to, and questions. Dr. Wood about 911 and talking about the hurricane and what possible reason it may have been there and why weren't we told about it. Go ahead.
Well, those are just pieces of information. And as I say, you keep looking at the evidence until it tells you what happened. My background, as I said, is in interferometry. And when I saw that patch on the car that wasn't cooked and the part next to it, you know, looked toasted, you know, nice new wax job and a nanometer over, completely toasted, that reminds me of, you know, like a contact print with a photograph where it's with a photograph, let's think of how that works. It isn't just the light that's making a photographic print. The light is activating the chemicals that are in the photographic emulsion. So it's an interference, an interaction between the two. The photographic emulsion is uniform. The photographic negative, or image that you put on your photographic film, the light is allowed to go through in some places and not others, and that controls the exposure. So you have a uniform field, and then you have something that activates it in different amounts. Well, let's think about a uniform field of energy, and then you have something that interferes with it in specific places by specific amounts. But it's not quite fully controlled. There's a few oopses and leaks here and there. And why I go to the issue of energy is because how do you have something burning next to paper that's not burning? How do you have steel turning to dust and glowing as it turns to dust while paper does not burn? We don't see stacks of burned bodies. We see, you know, body parts, but they're not burned. There's a burnt aspect of them, but that's trying to fit it into our known framework of how we see things. Also, these round holes in the windows, the circular holes through the outer pane, but not the inner pane. That, the only thing I would know that would cause that is a longitudinal wave of energy. You know, think of dropping a pebble into a still pond of water. It ripples outward. But let's say it ripples outward faster than the water can handle. It's going to have sort of a standing wave kind of a boundary to it. I think that might be kind of how it works. But then I keep looking at more and more things. There's all this nonsense about molten metal. And you know, if water is put on molten metal, you have a steam explosion. We didn't have a steam explosion on 9/11. When water goes from, liquid to gas, because it turns into steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times. That's 1,600 times. That's a huge amount. So it's like every molecule suddenly needs more room. I was thinking about that. It was on my mind. I was looking at a picture of the tipping top of Tower 2, where it looks like suddenly around the hinge point, the building just turns into kind of like a steam form of building. Like solid turns into this, erupts into this like a gas, but not really a gas. I'm just looking at it as analogous. Uh-huh. As though every molecule had to repel its neighbor.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in a minute here. This is amazing. Okay, we're back from break here, Dr. Wood, and you were telling us about the buildings up there. It looks like it was steam or dust or something. Go ahead.
Yeah, the solid building suddenly, looked like it. The molecules that are attracted to each other to make a solid material suddenly look like they were repelling each other, kind of like water turning into steam. And I thought, wow, that's pretty weird. And it seemed like a pretty consistent theme. And so I started looking into kinds of things do that. That's where I found the Casimir Force, about that. And I also found an article about how it can get the direction can get reversed to the point it causes levitation. And it can also cause propulsion. You know, it's on a continuum of different explanations. And then I got to thinking about these wheat checks coming down that appeared to be coming down faster than gravity, like they were being propelled down, like they're, you know, had rocket motors shooting out of the back. And you see this material just shooting out. Well, yeah, if it's turning into dust and the material is repelling itself, it's going to get the solid part that hasn't come apart yet and propel it down faster. Now, I don't say the building collapsed faster than free fall speed. I say it was destroyed faster. It went away faster from the beginning to the end of when the building went away visually, and also from the seismic signal. The North Tower shook the ground for only 8 seconds when it went away, or 8.4 seconds. And it takes 9.5 seconds in a vacuum to drop something from the roof to the pavement. So, you know, Houston, we have a problem.
Absolutely.
So the buildings went away. They were destroyed faster than physics can explain with free fall.
And that's both of the buildings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, here's another really quick hands-on type of exercise. If the buildings came boom, 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 pancaking down on each other in 8 seconds, let's give it 10 seconds or 12 seconds. There's 110 stories that go away in, you know, let's say 10 seconds or so, or 12. How many times can you clap your hands in 10 or 12 seconds?
Not very many.
That's like 10 claps a second. Now, think about how fast this building went away. We're not talking about a little bit of difference. We're talking about a lot different than what's physically possible with ordinary physics.
Mm-hmm.
But if the building turned into dust and did not slam to the ground, which is, if you look at the evidence, that's what the evidence shows, then, of course, the ground only shook for 8 seconds. And Building 7 was even more dramatic. It was like the impact of a jackhammer. A jackhammer. Can you imagine that? You have 47 stories where each floor is the size of a football field. If those came crashing down, it would be like raining dump trucks, wouldn't it?
How long did Building 7 take to hit the ground?
It's arguable, you know, different, what, 6.5 seconds, 18 seconds, depending on who you talk to. But the seismic energy associated with it was barely or not even barely detectable above background noise.
Mm-hmm.
That needs an explanation.
So where do you think this, in your educated guess of the evidence, points to now? I know you had mentioned on your homepage the Hutchinson effect.
And, right. When I started looking at the Casimir Force, suddenly all of these chunks of evidence, by golly, there was a reproduction of each one of these phenomena that he had done on a small scale. So it had to me, it said it had to involve the same type of physics. It was reproducible on this scale, on a small scale. Now, for the same field effect that the hurricane could have provided, John Hutchinson uses he first used a Tesla coil, then he uses a Van de Graaff generator. It creates a field, an energy field, and within that, he interferes another kind of energy. It interferes with that field. So that could provide the direction or, you know, the exposure, using my photographic analogy, of of the uniform field, you know, to control it within that. And we do know it was directed because we have these cylindrical cutouts. Very, you know, clean.
So what you're saying is that the hurricane played some part in this 911, then, you think?
It could have. It appears that way. Looking into hurricanes more, you remember hearing about how straw goes through trees if it's flying fast enough?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of a myth, but there's something that does happen with hurricanes that is very similar to the Hutchinson effect. We get levitation. Well, that's something I didn't mention. Around the World Trade Center, we also have upside-down cars. And the cars that are upside down are not toasted. They're just upside down. There's a picture where there's a car parked that's toasted. The car parked in front of it isn't toasted, but it's upside down in a parking spot.
What, would you say is the Hutchinson effect?
It's a whole host of phenomena that, you know, like levitation. There's disintegration of materials. It's a wide variety, long list of things. There's a link to John Hutchinson's website, a new website from mine. It's thehutchinsoneffect.com. No, thehutchinsoneffect.com. And that gives some pretty good explanations of all the different phenomena. And this Hutchinson series compared with the World Trade Center that I have on my site as well, where you have pictures from the World Trade Center and pictures of John Hutchinson samples. And you can see the correlation. We've seen this horseshoe-shaped beam or curled up beams at the World mm-hmm. Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
John Hutchinson has these big, solid, you know, massive copper, molybdenum, aluminum, steel bars that curl and bend and do weird things. And there's videos of it, too, where it looks like it's doing sit-ups. There's a steel bar that's doing sit-ups, and then it flies someplace.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple callers here. I'll take a couple quick
Great.
Calls here. Keith, go ahead. You're online. Go ahead. You got a question?
Yes. Hello, Ralph and Judy. And I just
Hi.
Wanted to say thanks to you, Judy, for putting all the anomalies on your website and also for getting us all confused now. But there's two things I wanted to talk about. I know your expertise is not in weaponry, but how does directed energy relate to scalar, particle beams, space-based weapons? I mean, have you? Go ahead.
I started out just looking at the evidence and see what the evidence tells me. I didn't know anything about directed energy weapons when I began, but what the evidence told me is that that's what it had to be, that it had to exist because that's, you know, what the material tells me what happened to it. And why I call it directed energy weapons, because what else do I call it? It's energy that was directed and used as a weapon.
Well, it seems to me, obviously, there's at least two different weapon systems. There's explosions before all this molecular dissolution of metal and concrete and not paper. So it seems like they have technology where they can, kind of like an analogy to neutron bombs. They can do this destruction to, you know, human life and not touch buildings. I mean, they can pick and choose what they want to dissolve at the molecular level. Would you say that?
What disintegrates. I think the building was disintegrating the whole hour or hour mm-hmm. and a half, whatever, for each building because you see the building shedding and parts coming down. There's things otherwise you can't explain without saying the building was dissolving. Just like Building 7, it was dissolving all afternoon. All that stuff that looked like smoke coming out, that was building mass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cause, I mean, the different types of clouds and the color of them and the way they... But,
right.
You know, the other thing, too, I wanted to ask Ralph, I mentioned last week, did you get a chance to watch Missing Links, a video? Ralph?
Me?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
Okay, see, now this is kind of important because, I mean, just starting at the basic level, for us people who are not scientists or anything else, but they're showing slow motion of the videos that we were shown of planes allegedly hitting the towers. But, I mean, this is beyond anything that's possible the way they show it. I mean, the penetration into the buildings, you know. Planes are aluminum. I don't care if they weigh a lot and they're going 450 miles an hour. They're going to crumple like a tin can when a fat man steps on it on a concrete sidewalk.
Can I interrupt you here? Do you want to have any comment on that? Because I got a bunch of other callers backed up here, too.
Yeah, we could talk about the airplanes, you know, all day and night and so forth. They don't describe what happened to the building, so they're sort of a non-issue. But what we, you know, the explanation that airplanes went through the wall like a, you know, better than a Greg Louganis dive, a splashless dive, it needs some explanation, as well as why it could go in an angle and not, you know, flip around. The physics of it don't work.
Okay. Okay, well, I hear the music calling, and thanks for calling, Keith. We've got a couple other callers. Okay, we're back for break here, talking 911. Dr. Judy Wood, a physicist, and we have Sheldon. You're next in line. Go ahead.
Hello, Ralph.
Yeah, hello there.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to admit it, but I'm one of Dr. Wood's biggest supporters. I, too, was an Alex Jones fanatic about bombs in the building until talk show host Dion Burley brought to my attention in August of last year about Dr. Wood's research, and I think she's definitely an expert in this field. And for anybody that, you know, wants to go along with bombs in the building, how about firefighter testimony of Scott packs exploding? Do you know what those are?
No.
Yeah, so what do they do? Put thermite in the fireman's oxygen bottle? So that's a good one to throw out there for those doubting Thomases about directed energy weapons.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question for Dr. Wood for the listeners?
You know, the hurricane was definitely parked off the East Coast. According to Professor Jim McCanny and former meteorologist Scott Stevens, they have figured out how to weaponize hurricanes, so the hurricane aspect of the weaponry definitely makes sense in all this, so I just wanted to throw that in.
Okay, do you have any comment, Dr. Wood? Thanks, Sheldon.
Yeah, I'm glad he brought up the Scott Pack issue. I think the previous caller was talking about explosions beforehand, or maybe he was talking about something else. But often folks say, well, we heard explosions. Well, when you put a raw egg in your microwave oven, you hear an explosion. It doesn't mean that TNT is in your egg, you know, a cooking egg, like a chicken egg. Things explode for various reasons. You put a soda can in your freezer, it's going to explode when it freezes. If you have a pressurized container and you're dissolving the metal, it gets thin enough to the point and loses its integrity enough so that the pressure inside explodes out. The building is full of air pressure tanks, water tanks. Think of I call them turbo toilets. You know, the air pressure that's used to minimize the amount of water that's required to flush a toilet. So, you know, think of how many toilets you have in every single floor of the building. You have air pressure tanks every so many floors. You have the water that's needed for that, that's holding tanks for the water. If that water container breaks, what happens? You know, you get it shooting out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the interesting thing is these extra oxygen bottles on the fire trucks at ground level parked outside of the towers were exploding in the trucks. And that needs to be explained.
Wow.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead and stay. I was just going to the caller. Go ahead and finish your thought.
There's an eyewitness who was running along VC Street when Tower 2 was going poof, and that's, you know, a couple blocks away, and describing as she ran past cars, there's exploding, just blowing up for no reason. And there's some others that we're describing further up from there. The cars were just going into spontaneous combustion or exploding. Just as they walked past them, it was, you know, pretty creepy.
So there's absolutely no way that this could have happened in this, these BS stories with the explosives, or because it's physically impossible to collapse or be destroyed, I guess, in the time frame that they gave us. It's not impossible. And then how do all these cars that aren't even there, how can you explain that?
You didn't even have pockmarks on the adjacent buildings. They should look sandblasted if there were bombs in the building.
So we're being fed a whole bunch of cover lies. It makes great video, and they put a story with it, and we're supposed to buy the sound bite, and we're done.
Right. It's to herd those asking questions off into a different direction.
Mm-hmm. A guy in Arizona or Arkansas. Guy, you there? Got a question for Dr. Wood?
Yeah. Yes, Ralph. I'm here, and I'm in Arkansas. And does your guest have a website real quick?
DrJudyWood.com. Thank you for asking. Yeah, DrJudyWood.com.
Okay, thank you so much. Dr. Wood, what you're describing with the engines and the hole in the glass and the other peculiarities that you've discovered, do you have any of those pictures on your website? I haven't been there, so that's why I'm asking.
Oh, an abundance of more than enough. You'll be there for days.
Okay, fantastic.
For good once over, go to the WTC Cliff Notes page, or after drjudywood.com/WTC. And it takes a little while to load, but it's some of everything on there.
Oh, thank you so much for that. The last time I talked with you, you were on the Sophia Network on RBN so many months ago. And I had you were explaining at that time that there was an energy that was missing to explain the rapid descent of the building.
That was somebody impersonating me. That was not me.
Oh.
That was not me. I was never on that show.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Well, I stand corrected.
It was done for that purpose, I believe. Andrew Johnson wrote an article about that. If you go to my website, you'll see links to his site and also a book that he has presented, and that's in there. A free book to download.
Ralph, I've got something else to say here.
Okay, well, let's hold on through the break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back from break here, and Guy, you had another question here. I got a couple other callers. You had another question or comment?
I'll make it quick, Ralph. I respect your time. Thank you, Mr. Woods. Dr. Woods, rather. I did not mean that someone was impersonating you. I just must have made a mistake there. But what if you are interested in the speed of the collapse of the buildings? I have heard that C4 was implanted in those buildings, and one of the properties of C4 is that it creates gravity waves. So this would be an answer to the quick fall of the buildings if a certain amount of C4 was planted in those buildings to create the gravity waves to bring these buildings down quicker. Thank you, Ralph, and I'll let the callers jump on. Thank you.
Oh, you have a comment, Dr. Wood?
Yeah, C4 might do something, but it is inconsistent with what we saw happen. C4 is an explosive, a kinetic energy weapon that launches material outward. Material was not launched very far outward from this building. For example, the postal building does not have pockmarks on it. The facade of it wasn't damaged at all. WFC 1, 2, and 3 have holes in their windows, and then marble is missing around the doorway, but except for that one corner, there's no damage to the facade in terms of, like, no stab wounds. Doesn't look sandblasted. And
so
you go all the way around the complex. And that's what you would get if you had an explosive.
So the bottom line is it wasn't explosives.
Right. And you also would have temperature associated with explosives.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't temperature associated with this.
Okay. Mike in Kentucky, do you have a question or a comment? We've got a couple other callers here. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, directed energy weapons, of course, seems plausible to me. I mean, what's a microwave? It's specifically tuned to vibrate water molecules, and water molecules will vibrate with certain frequency. They have certain harmonic frequencies that you can vibrate water molecules, and they get all excited and heat up, and that's how you get a lot of your food cooked in a microwave. So,
exactly,
it's not some science fiction concept. I mean, I think a lot of people are out of touch with what technologies have been developed since World War II. And a lot of times the public doesn't find out about them for 20 years after the government's already had the stuff implemented. But are you contending that the pictures that show construction type equipment lifting up chunks of glowing hot metal, and these accounts from the workers there that had, you know, accidentally stepping on places where they would melt their boots and things, these really hot temperatures in the debris pile, and even NASA's thermal imaging, you're saying that that stuff was faked or what?
No, it's the interpretation.
There's a lot of pictures of really molten-looking metal out there. And let's
think about it. If you were wading through molten metal with your boots, does that make sense?
Nobody's wading through. That's an exaggeration. Nobody's wading through molten metal, but there are pictures that, you know, I guess it could be faked in this digital age of a lot of really glowing hot metal.
Dr. Wood answer the question. You've stated, okay. What's your comment, Dr. Wood?
Thanks. Like, for example, the picture of the grappler that's picking up the glowing piece of material. If that material is glowing because it's hot, then the hydraulics on that grappler would not be working.
No, not the whole thing that it's picking up is not glowing hot. It's the part that it has a hold of is an upper portion that's cooled, and when it picked it up, it pulled pieces of it from below that were still hot.
The picture I see is it's glowing, being held by jaws that aren't glowing. There's an abrupt interface between the two. And if this had been something that was glowing because it's hot, that means it's over 1,200 degrees centigrade. In order for this grappler to dig down to, you know, pull that out, it's going to be hot sticking in the ground. It's going to be hot for quite a while. And then another question I have is, where is it taking it? Why did it pick it up? To take it to the dumpster? If it sees something glowing, why is it grabbing it and picking it up? Well, you don't have a hydraulic equipment reaching into a molten metal furnace at a foundry. It's insane. But 82 degrees centigrade is the maximum temperature before you permanently harm or destroy your hydraulic equipment. And the control arms for that jaw are connected directly to, you know, just a few inches from where that grappler is holding the thing. So that's pretty good evidence that that item is not hot. There's also pictures of this glowing stuff sitting on paper that is not burning. Go ahead.
I'm sure you've read or maybe the design flaw that was in the towers where the aluminum facade was bolted directly to the outer structural steel that was supposed to be a tube within a tube design, and because of metallurgists will tell you that, and I've run into that in my own personal life, you cannot put aluminum directly in contact with steel. It creates an electrical oxidation.
Yeah, I'm looking at the physical evidence of what happened.
Right.
And seeing what happened.
From what I understand, and there's interviews with the people who were involved in the demolition plan, who one day were, you know, they had
that's hearsay of he said, she said, who said, what said.
This is the guy who came to work one day, and the next day the offices were cleaned out.
Let's let Dr. Wood go ahead and answer this question, because I got a couple other callers, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't in that office, and so it's word of mouth about what, you know, who did what wherever. I'm looking at physical evidence about what happened physically. And we were talking about this, you know, the control arm and so forth. It can only function up to 82 degrees before it's permanently damaged. And so that right there rules out that was glowing because it was hot. Now, it turns out that one of the effects of this type of physics that's involved in the Hutchinson effect is luminescence without heat. Melting of metals without heat. So actually the temperature drops a tad, where metals seem to melt, but they're not hot. And that, to me, seems to agree with the evidence a whole lot more of why you would have this glowing, you know, white, hot-looking thing sitting on paper that doesn't burn.
Okay. Let's go ahead to the next caller here.
Okay.
Yeah, we got, let's see, Dr. Carley, I guess you're on hold here.
Oh, great. Yeah, hi, Dr. Wood, and hi, Ralph. I'm so glad you're having Dr. Wood on. Ralph, I've had her on my show on RBN, What's Ailing America, that's on Saturdays. It's in the archives a few months ago. And besides the biological weapons, they're getting ready to spring on us with vaccines. Obviously, this is a very important thing that people have to realize. And I'm very excited because I had contacted Dr. Wood to tell her, and the DVD is now available, folks, so please listen up. The History Channel has a new show now on every Tuesday called That's Impossible. So go to history.com/store. Type in the name of the show, That's Impossible, and it will come up with a whole bunch of documentaries they've done. And two of these documentaries back up Dr. Wood. The first one is That's Impossible Weather Warfare. So you're going to learn on that how they're creating hurricanes and things like that. And the other one that's very important as far as Dr. Wood's material is called That's Impossible, Death Rays and Energy-Directed Weapons. And so I encourage you to try to get those, Dr. Wood, as well, because they're basically showing, I'm going to read what they write here. They're bringing to the front the technology to the battlefield. They're going to explore reports of high-powered lasers that can shoot down enemy planes and vaporize armies from space. Bombs that release bursts of energy more powerful than nuclear warheads. Okay? So they're now putting that right on television so that we can see what they're up to.
Okay, great. Do you have any sort of comment, Dr. Wood, before we go to the next
caller? Yes. And you bring up a good point is, you know, what I'm saying, I'm just presenting evidence, but there are certain folks that don't want that to be heard, and the momentum has been picked up with the, you know, distortion of it that's calling it space beams or ray beams from space. I have never said where this is located or what type of energy source it was. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a laser beam from space, yet that's how it gets repeated to make it sound silly.
Well, I'm just saying that they have this show which has documentation.
Oh, and they're probably trying to do it.
Yes. So yeah, I just wanted the listeners to know that if they find this far-fetched, you can check out those DVDs and see it for yourself.
Okay.
Oh, yes, thanks.
You're very welcome. Great show. Bye-bye.
Before we get to the next caller, because I want to have enough time. We've got another caller here sitting. What do you attribute this to? Is this tied into the Tesla's technology, that Hutchinson effect? Or?
Exactly. John Hutchinson didn't do something new. He just put it together and demonstrated it. He was trying to replicate what Nikola Tesla had done. Mm-hmm. And who knows who had done it before then. And actually, John Hutchinson replicated the Ark of the Covenant flames, and that's also on his website, a video showing that. But, yeah, it's 100 years ago, Tesla had brought out this technology, but he wanted to give free energy to the world, but thought that it would be used for bad as well as good, and didn't want that. And so, as the story goes, it was kept out of existence. But if it's being used for bad, then there's no risk. We might as well benefit from using it for good as well.
So the bottom line is, if I get this right, this basically is a Tesla's type of material that Dr. Hutchinson, which could explain all of these anomalies. And this is electromagnetic type of situation that we're witnessing?
It's interference of different types of energy and different fields of energy, like microwaves within an electrostatic field, or, you know, that's one form.
Mm-hmm.
And as for, you know, microwaves not working or direct energy not working, well, we know that microwaves work, and you don't see it work, and it doesn't
mm-hmm.
burn paper.
Mm-hmm.
It cooks the food, but it doesn't burn the paper.
Yep.
Imagine that.
Okay, Fred, California, you got a question here before we go to break for Dr.
Wood? Yeah, I do, quickly. The Purdue University website shows their several years creation time for a animation of a plane cutting into the building. And they say in the text of that website that the engine shafts of the four engines on the two planes went through the buildings like bullets. And my question has been, since I read that, is where the heck did they go? Are they stuck in a building somewhere in downtown New York? Were they picked up by some guys down in the South Bronx somewhere and taken down to their clubhouse? And Purdue University claimed that these titanium, I think they said, engine shafts were virtually indestructible, and that's why they went through like bullets. I find, looking up the jet engines that were used on those planes, supposedly were built by Rolls-Royce and had two or three shafts.
Let me interrupt here. Doctor, what do you want to comment on? I got another caller, too, and then I want to give you time before.
Jet airplanes don't cause round holes in windows. They don't turn material into powder. Yeah. And cause cars down FDR Drive to become mysteriously toasted. You know, they don't also cause cars around the area to flip upside down. On and on and on. So the planes are irrelevant. You know, whether they were or weren't planes is sort of irrelevant to this argument. It's another issue, and there's no evidence for crashed planes. That has been positively identified. But even if it doesn't matter if there was or wasn't, airplanes do not cause buildings to turn into powder in midair.
So the bottom line is it's a nice cover story to redirect our attention from what's really going on. And looky, the airplanes hit and hoo-ha.
Yeah, we start talking about airplanes or building designs, and we quit talking about the evidence. The evidence tells the story. Like, one particular thing I didn't talk about was the dust that lands fairly quickly, and then the upwind of the Trade Center, you see a clear blue sky in the background, and pretty soon you notice this fuzz coming up from the ground. The dust continued to break down after it landed. Coarse dust landed, settled out of the air quickly, continued to break down, and started rising up like streets were fuming.
Wow.
So, you know, airplanes don't do that.
No. Alberto. Oh, yeah, Art. Now, Alberto, you have a call, please. Go ahead.
Hello.
You have a question. We haven't got much time here before break.
Yes, for the doctor that says that the hydraulic equipment is going to fail at 82 degrees, I disagree with that. I mean, water boils at 100, so hydraulic equipment and steel isn't going to fail at 82 degrees.
If permanent damage occurs there. That's, you know, from textbooks on hydraulic equipment. Look up Brandon Casey on the Internet. There's a whole host of information about that.
From my personal experience, water boils at 100 degrees centigrade, and 82 degrees isn't going to all of a sudden just cause hydraulics to fail.
Okay, Brandon Casey's a hydraulics expert, but here's something that I think anyone who's serviced their car probably understands is, when your car overheats, it destroys the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And the water's boiling by then. So, you know, it pressurizes, and you have to worry about pulling the cap off the radiator because it's going to, you know, be shooting out with lots of pressure. And parts, if your car overheats, parts are destroyed because they don't, it doesn't lubricate properly.
Well, I saw another picture on there where all of these people are supposedly looking at all this glowing molten metal. How does that happen?
I'm not sure which picture you're talking about. If it's glowing, it can, you know, it could glow because it's hot, but all things that glow aren't necessarily hot.
That's true, and that's the problem we got. Okay, we're going to break and be back, and then Dr. Wood, you can make a closing comment for 3 or 4 minutes. Well, we're back from break talking about 911. We have Dr. Wood today, and she's brought some amazing information, evidence, about the speed of the building falling. It's an impossibility. The 80% or better of the building is missing. Cars that are in the surrounding areas that shouldn't have anything to do with this, that are upside down or flipped or toasted, and then a hurricane that nobody wants to talk about in the weather. So based on all that, you have the floor for closing for whatever you would choose to address.
Well, there's a lot of different evidence. And what keeps you from seeing it is preconceived ideas. As I said, that you know, when things happen, people have questions. As soon as they're given an answer, they quit asking questions. And they assume that their answer is correct because they learned it from some guru or somebody wearing a uniform, you know, like a police officer or whatever. And they needed an answer. But then also, it was such a horrible event that happened that day. Who wants to go back and think through things again? That's like reliving it. So it tends to stay, you know, however it was written. But I think it's so important that we all think our own thoughts. Don't let anyone else give you your opinion. Don't take my word for it. I present all this evidence on my website because I want everybody to be empowered to be able to see the evidence themselves and think carefully about what they're seeing. Yeah, don't try hard not to get distracted with other issues, because we first have to answer the question about what happened before we can address how it happened or who done it, much less why it happened. It's important to go in that order and just, you know, try to hold out every biased thought you might have. And that's why I use these weird words, like, you know, generic terms like fuzzballs, fuzzy blobs, fuming. I don't say smoke because that implies fire. It implies a particular cause. If you say generic term fuming, you don't know if it's chemical, if it's fire, or what it is. And it's a placeholder for a phenomenon that needs, you know, addressing. So there's a whole host of these. And if you go to my website, drjudywood.com, and go to the Cliff Notes page, there's a list of evidence that needs to be explained.
Well, I really want to thank you for being on. I'm really honored to have you on the show. Maybe you'll agree to come back on again, because this is an important issue. And the thing that, because I do law type things, is I wanted to see evidence. And when I started seeing this evidence that does not fit into these BS stories that they're putting out there, I said, I want to see the evidence. And there's no way to account for this. It's not accountable except in something along the Tesla technology or something. So,
I would like to add, if I could add one more thing. Happened to run into a former student of mine in a local store last night. And I have to thank him for this wonderful example he gave about what was going on. He's studying acoustics of audio systems and about interference. And I think we're all familiar with how speaker systems affect things differently, and where you get quiet spots, loud spots, sound cancellation, that's interference of another kind of wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty cool.
Well, I'd like to have you on again. We'll have to get Ted Kahn. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to have you on, and I appreciate your time. And I hope we've awakened some people, and I encourage you to go to Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com, and check it out for yourself. And let's engage the brain synopsis and forget the cover stories. And, again, I thank you again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, as I say in closing, boy, this would enlighten the thing. Watch out for the federales. They're everywhere. And I hope you enjoyed the show. And I encourage you to go to Dr. Judy Wood's homepage because it's a wealth of information. And we will see you next week. God bless you.
With recent internet